ladies and gentlemen, thank you for riding Caltrain. Please get on board so we can keep the train on time. Anybody needing assistance, please look out for the conductor as we come along. Thank you for riding Caltrain. All aboard. Let's go, everybody. Get on board. We're trying to keep the train on time. Let's go.
You know, I saw him several times on the train and already noticed that he was always joyful, thankful. Just by his like whole demeanor, attitude makes a difference. He looks at people, he appreciates people. I mean, and that sets the tone for the rest of my day.
What impact does it have on you when you're commuting? Because commuting can be pretty not fun, right?
Exactly. And one day, he was actually apologizing to all of us with bikes because there were only two bike cars instead of three. And he was like, you know, we don't have room, but we're going to make it work and we're all a team. And he just had such good spirits about it. And he just, you know, thanks everyone when I get off the train or when you get on the train. It's just like, it makes me smile that he smiles. It makes my day.
Lee, Crystal didn't even know your name. We had our producers here tracking you down through Caltrain, making tons of phone calls to find this magical person who was so nice. What was your first thought when you heard about this story?
I'm in awe, really. I'm very in awe, and I'm thankful for you, Crystal. I really appreciate the compliments and the kudos.
Crystal, what are you, now that you're connected with Lee, you know his name, do you have anything you want to say to him?
Just how you just responded, saying you're thankful, that's just so you. You're seen. I think there's many other commuters as well who appreciate you.
And I appreciate, and I do remember the exact day, the incident that took place, where we had a miscommunication and we had not enough bike cars on the train. And I remember that day specifically. And yes, it was very hectic, but I thank all of you guys and girls for riding Caltrain. Without you, there is no us. And I try to make everybody ride pleasant and comfortable for everyone. And I do look at everyone in the eye and I thank them for riding our service, because without the public riding Caltrain, there would be no Caltrain. So I thank you, Crystal, for recognizing me. And thank you for putting up for that unfortunate incident. And I apologize profusely again today for that incident. Hopefully you won't have to deal with such an incident again in the future.
Well, I just want to say, see what I mean?
No, I really do. And I'm starting to get all misty-eyed over here because I can't believe we're talking about transportation.
Every time I'm on a train that he's the conductor on, I'm like, I smile. And I always want to say thank you back. I'm not sure if he ever has heard me, but...
Well, he hears you now. Lee, do you realize that you are such a source of kindness in your riders' lives, especially in Crystal's life? Had you had any idea?
Not really, to the extent that this is. I look at it, I try to make everybody's life a little bit more pleasant, and I feel if I could bring just one little bit of kindness into someone's life, that will set the tone for the day. And if we bring kindness and happiness to the world, we can change it by one smile at a time, the way I look at it.
That's what you're doing.
Lee, Crystal, thank you so, so much. And I hope you both keep spreading kindness. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Crystal. Hope to see you soon one day.
Yeah, I want to give you a hug, Lee. See you soon.
I will accept that. Thank you, Crystal.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega. And today on the show, we've got a whole hour dedicated to kindness. You just heard Crystal Vanderboom of San Francisco and Lee Guillory, a conductor for the Bay Area commuter rail Caltrain. For weeks, we've been bringing you stories of kindness, big and small, for our series, America the Kind. And Crystal was just one of many of you, our listeners, who nominated people who make America kind. And one theme that emerged from those nominations was kindness from absolute strangers. Here's two stories we got from you.
My name is Elena Forsetti. I'm from Clifton, New Jersey, and I'm calling because back about 10 years ago, I didn't have health insurance, and I went to get medication that I needed very badly. And without insurance, it cost close to $300. I told the pharmacist to put it back, and someone online behind me heard that I couldn't afford it and paid for it for me, just a total stranger. When I approached her, she said that she had hard times too, and she understood. And now that I have more money, I try to go to the pharmacy a few times a year to give money to pay for people who can't afford their meds.
Yeah, my name's James, calling from Long Beach, and a couple years ago had an excellent display of kindness at a Trader Joe's. I had accidentally left my wallet in my vehicle, and upon trying to pay for the groceries, a kind gentleman appeared from behind me and paid for my groceries, and would not take payment back in return, instead used the words, "pass it on." So since this moment 2 years ago, I've had the opportunity to pay it forward many, many times, and that gentleman certainly left a big mark on my life as well as my family's. So in his words, pass it on.
Pass it on, pay it forward, kindness is contagious. We hear these phrases over and over, but is there proof that it goes beyond nice cliches?
So we tend to think of conformity as a source of bad behavior. But in fact, in my lab, we found that conformity can be a force for good as well. So my name is Jamil Zaki, and I'm an assistant professor of psychology at Stanford University. It is a trope that kindness is contagious. But I think one thing that's especially interesting for us is just how deep it can go, right? I mean, one thought would be, well, I see other people around me acting kindly, and I feel sort of obligated to, like I kind of have to be nice just to kind of get along with everyone else. But in our research, it seems as though, in fact, that kind of seeps into even our emotional lives, right? So it's not just that I feel like I should do something nice because someone else has, but actually that I feel a deeper care for others if I think that the people around me feel care as well. One of the things that our research suggests is that if you want to spread more kindness, it's actually not that difficult to do so because people tend to go along with the behaviors and experiences that they see in other people. So if you act kindly, you're generating a norm that other people can follow. So you can sort of inspire others to act in the way that you've acted.
And if you're looking for a model of kindness on this Christmas day, look no further than this call that came to The Takeaway when we asked you to nominate stories for America the Kind.
Hi, my name is Corrine Taylor. I'm calling from West Bridgewater, Massachusetts, and I'm calling about an act of kindness that was done in my town. It was found that there is a resident that has cancer. She loves Christmas, and it was put out to decorate your house, you know, lights, decorations, and over 50 houses were decorated. And most of these same people who did this did not know her, just thought it was a nice thing to do to brighten someone's day that was really in need of it.
Danette Guthrow was diagnosed with stage 4 pancreatic cancer in July.
My mom wanted to celebrate while she felt well enough to celebrate and enjoy the kids and the family. She's always loved Christmas. It's always been a big deal in our family.
That's Danette's daughter, Lisa Holden, and she lives close to her mom in West Bridgewater, Massachusetts.
So she decided that she wanted to do it early.
Danette and Lisa had planned to keep their early Christmas to the family. But then the town got wind of what was happening and the celebration grew, eventually involving a toy drive in Danette's honor and a group of carolers organized by neighbor Heather DePalma. So I talked to Heather and Lisa about that night on November 3rd and what it meant for Danette and the whole town. But we start at the beginning of the story. And as Lisa says, the premature holiday celebration began small.
My mom and myself and one neighbor decided we were going to, you know, put up our lights outside so that my mother could enjoy them. And I just let some people in town know that what we were doing so that people didn't think we lost our minds and forgot about Thanksgiving. And pretty soon the town joined in.
And Heather, when did you come into all this? You knew Lisa, but you didn't know her mom.
Correct. Lisa's daughter and my daughter are in third grade together. And so we've chatted, you know, at parent pickup and everything. And Lisa knows that I'm involved with the Girl Scouts in town. I'm a troop leader here. And so she reached out to me early November before Thanksgiving to see if I could gather some Girl Scouts together to do early Christmas caroling for her mom.
Tell me about what happened next.
Well, I am a Christmas person as well, so I think we're kind of kindred spirits here. So I kind of went a little nuts crazy, if you will, by involving my brother, who owns a local DJ company. He DJs weddings and things, because I know he had access to a snow machine. So he's my first call. So we got some snow so Danette could experience a little bit more festivities. And then just the town really stepped up around us. A lot of people were contacting me, to join the Girl Scouts to carol for Danette. So it was really, really heartwarming to see all these people stepping up, willing to help out.
Lisa, why does your mom love Christmas so much? And what did it mean for her when she saw this?
Well, Christmas has always just been joyful. It's all happiness, it's enjoying the children and the laughing, and it's just magical. So I just figured, like, as a gift, you know, we've never seen carolers before, and we've always talked about that. And she was all smiles all night. It meant the world to her.
The whole community really got together for this. I even had one mom who purchased 30 Santa hats from the store to bring and pass out. And just the look on her face when she saw it was close to 200 people walking through her yard singing Here Comes Santa Claus and yelling Merry Christmas is an image that I will never get out of my head. Just the pure joy on her face. It was just a beautiful thing.
Lisa, how did you feel about that when you saw the community come together?
It was absolutely amazing. Absolutely. They provided memories that we couldn't. Put a smile on mom's face. I can't even describe the feeling that was in the air that night. So much love. And it literally felt like we were in like a Hallmark movie. I can't even describe how amazing it was.
Heather, how do we become more kind? You seem to have a good handle on this kindness thing.
Well, I think it's one of the greatest gifts we can give our children is to teach them the true meaning of Christmas and the true meaning of being a community member, the true meaning of taking care of your neighbors and your friends and your family.
It doesn't take a whole lot to make someone else smile, and that can take you very far.
Lisa, Heather, thanks for coming on the show and for sharing your story, and Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
That was Lisa Holden and Heather DePalma of West Bridgewater, Massachusetts. You're listening to the group of 200 people singing jingle bells to Danette in her backyard the night Christmas came early to West Bridgewater. You can see pictures of that night at thetakeaway.org/AmericaTheKind. Today on The Takeaway, we're bringing you a full hour on kindness, featuring stories from our series, America the Kind. And now we turn to a question we encountered throughout the series. Can kindness be taught?
You know, I've been doing this job for a long time, and I've noticed that with every year, there seems to be a new approach or a new set of curriculum to try to teach character in our schools.
Justin Parmenter teaches language arts to 7th graders at Waddell Language Academy in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Every year I see students' eyes glaze over and I see just the complete disconnect.
But then in October, there was a shooting at a high school in Justin's district. A 16-year-old boy was killed over a personal conflict.
It really brought home, I guess, the sense of urgency that we needed to start doing something to be more intentional about practicing kindness and how we support interpersonal relationships in our schools.
So just a few days later, Justin launched a new activity in his classroom, Undercover Agents of Kindness. Each student randomly drew a name out of a bowl and had 2 weeks to do something nice for that person.
The brain can be trained toward more compassionate behavior through regular practice of kindness towards strangers, towards family, towards people that you've had conflict with, that over time, practicing kindness leads to an increase in activity in the part of the brain associated with empathy and with compassion.
One of our listeners heard about Undercover Agents of Kindness and nominated Justin and his students for our series, America the Kind. So I reached Justin in his classroom along with two of his 7th graders, Elena Grady and the student who drew her name, Daylin Brown.
I didn't really like the whole idea. I'm not really good at meeting new people, so I was nervous about it. I thought it was going to be awkward just walking up to someone. Yeah.
So the way this works is that, Dalen, you pulled Elena's name. Did you know her at that point?
I had never spoken to her before.
And so when you got Elena's name, what did you decide to do?
Well, it took me a very long time to actually figure out what I wanted to do. So I tried to spend more time with her to find out what the kind of stuff that she liked. Like anything that if you got it for them, it would make their day.
So then what did you end up doing?
I ended up going and getting her ice cream from the cafeteria.
Elena, tell me a little bit about that. When you saw Dalen with ice cream, what did you think?
When she gave it to me, I wasn't even thinking about the project. I was just kind of like, oh, thank you. And then she was like, oh, it was for the kindness project. And I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot.
One of the goals that Justin, your teacher, had was to also try and get you guys to talk to different people. Dalen, did it help you sort of branch out a little bit?
Yeah, it did. It kind of helped me realize that the things that hold us back are more mental than they are like an actual problem. For me, I always thought that people would just reject me if I ever started talking to them. But the truth is, if you actually try and branch out, you'd be surprised at how nice people can be.
Why is kindness important right now?
Because we don't communicate as much face-to-face. And if you're texting someone, you can't really express how you're feeling.
I think that what Dalen said was awesome because a lot of people, what they do is everybody has a phone, everybody just texts, and no one really gets to socialize a whole bunch. So when you're texting about how you feel or something, you can't actually tell them what you're feeling because they can take it the wrong way through text. But when you tell them in person, they know how you're feeling.
Do you think that this has changed the way that you, Elena, and you, Dalen, are sort of dealing with your peers? And I think it's really interesting that you're talking about the social media element and texting. And do you think that this has changed the way you look at communicating with each other and being kind?
Yeah, I mean, despite it being a project, I actually had a lot of fun because it really made me feel more comfortable around my peers because it made me realize they're not that much different than I am. And I was the one who was separating myself.
Justin, I want to come back to you. What have you learned from the kids or for yourself even?
Well, I guess one of the things that I've learned is that change starts with a really small step. Sometimes the problems that we see in the world around us seem so overwhelming that, you know, we almost get into this mentality of just kind of retreating into the bunker and, you know, assuming that it will just sort itself out. But I think that we can take some small, simple steps in the right direction and that there can be a ripple effect where it can start to lead towards the kind of change and towards the kind of world that we really want to live in.
Justin, Dalen, and Elena, keep spreading the kindness and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Justin Parmenter teaches middle school at Waddell Language Academy in Charlotte, North Carolina. Dalen Brown and Elena Grady are two of his seventh grade students. Thanks to listener Jennifer Gossett for bringing us this story. Lots of you called in to nominate someone in your life who had helped you through a hard time. Listener Elton Follett said he found solace in small conversations with Jen Taylor, the receptionist at his gym, in Dunedin, Florida.
A little over a year ago, my eldest daughter died. And it was a very difficult cancer. And I was coming into the gym 3 times a week. And I found myself talking to Jen for 10 or 15 minutes every time I came in. And for 25 years, I taught psychotherapists. And I had 5 or 6 psychotherapist friends I could talk to. But it seemed to work out much better talking to Jen.
Jen, I want to ask you, what were some of the things you initially started talking about?
Oh, everything from the weather to cooking to how he really didn't want to work out, but he'd rather snorkel. It's one of his favorite hobbies.
It was just a very nice therapeutic time where we could talk about anything, and I didn't have to think about the terrible things that had gone on or the death of my daughter. And Jennifer is just very natural. I keep telling her she should be a life coach or something like that. Certainly a major effect in my healing process. And I think I would have grieved much longer and much harder if it hadn't been for Jen.
Oh, Elton, thank you for that.
Are you aware of that too, Jen? Are you aware that those little moments of kindness are that important?
Yes, I feel it, you know, especially from, you know, some of our older clients that, you know, don't get a lot of attention. Maybe their children don't live nearby. I feel like I get to be their surrogate, you know, child.
And what about you, Elton?
Oh, yes. I think that once you start being kind to people, they feel better and they're kind to their family and people around them, and it just spreads.
It's a ripple effect, in my opinion.
Elton and Jen, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Elton Follett is a retired psychotherapist living in Ozona, Florida, and Jen Taylor is the receptionist at Family Fitness in Dunedin, Florida. We've been hearing all about these nice things that people have done for each other. But why are humans kind? No, really, why? To answer this question, we turn to Jay Phelan, a biology professor at UCLA. And the first thing I wanted to know was, why does it feel good to be kind?
Well, you have to look at it from an evolutionary perspective. And emotions, including happiness and feeling good, they're tools that our genes use to manipulate us into doing stuff that benefits them.
And is kindness, how do you explain kindness from an evolutionary standpoint? Are we hardwired to be kind?
Well, I wouldn't say we're hardwired for anything. However, human beings are extremely vulnerable. We have an uncertain environment. And if you think back to when we were cavemen, if you're a caveman, you don't know, is there a famine around the next corner? Is there a flood or a natural disaster? And so your world is uncertain. If you have stored goodwill in other people, then you can sort of draw on it like a bank account. It's like, hey, you're going to help me out because you owe me.
But doesn't that, wouldn't, so I want to think about that scenario. So if I'm in the cave and I think there could be famine or death or disaster around the corner in a nearby cave, shouldn't my approach be to want to be more aggressive instead of just being kind?
Oh, no, because you have to buffer yourselves. When times are good, when you've got plenty, if you've got more than you need, sharing it is going to make you feel good because now you know, this person owes me, this person owes me, this person owes me. And then when the bad thing happens, you don't see it coming and you want to be able to draw on that. You are much better as part of a group of people who all are interrelated and owed each other than on your own. If you're just aggressive, then no one's going to come to your aid.
Now, is that the same thing as the term reciprocal altruism?
Yes, that's exactly it. Reciprocal altruism, it's a weird thing. Altruism means doing something that comes at a cost to you and benefits someone else. Reciprocal altruism says, well, let's put altruism in quotes, because you're not doing something really that comes at a cost to you and helps other people. It looks like altruism, but it's selfish, actually. You want to do something nice now because you'll get paid back later and the net benefit to you is positive.
That doesn't sound very selfless. Sounds a little selfish. Are we just being selfish?
That's exactly right. And it can sound sad and almost cynical that, hey, unconditional love doesn't exist. And it's true, except that we know what the conditions are. So we know, be nice to other people. Be nice to other people that you're going to see again. Establish relationships. Those are the conditions. And then people will be nice back to you.
Now, what about genuine altruism? Like, what about people just doing things that are nice for people, really out of the, dare I say, goodness of their heart?
From an evolutionary perspective, I'd call that maladaptive behavior. Now, that isn't to say that I don't do it or I don't like to see it, but we've been built so that when you do these things where someone is going to owe you, our brain gives us a reward. So we have this intensifying of dopamine release. because typically when you do something nice, now that means someone's going to owe you. You're going to get that favor back. But at the time you do the action of kindness, you actually feel pleasure. You feel pleasure because from the gene's perspective, you're going to get paid back. You've just made a deposit into that bank account of goodwill.
So I have a thing where I'm a New Yorker, and I think we get a bad rap for being not kind. And in fact, I think New Yorkers are quite kind. We just like people to make it quick. But I have a weakness for seeing, you know, for example, the elderly. And if I see someone who's elderly and struggling and alone, like I want to go up to them and ask them if they're okay and ask them if they need any help. Am I just doing that because I want to feel better about myself?
Yes, in a word. And the reason it can be confusing is you have to remember when we evolved, we lived in very small groups, 100 people or so. Every person you saw every day, you were going to see them again, and you were going to see them the next day and the next day. It's only this quirk of the modern world that now we live with thousands or hundreds of thousands of people. Your brain doesn't know that. It's a hunter-gatherer brain. When you see this person, you think, oh yeah, I'm going to see them all the time. So if I'm nice to them, they'll owe me, it'll come back. So now you're doing this thing, you might never see them again, but your brain thinks you're a hunter-gatherer, you're going to see everyone again. So you're making a mistake, but if you were a hunter-gatherer, that would be the nice thing. Therefore, it causes your brain to make you feel pleasure.
From an evolutionary perspective, I'm wondering, have we evolved to be more kind or less kind? Or is that not even possible?
Oh, no, it's absolutely possible. I think that it hasn't really changed that much. But I think the opportunities for wanting to be kind or being kind in situations where you're not going to get paid back, I think that's probably increased in our modern world. And that's something that evolution wouldn't favor that. But it's a slow process. So we're sort of like a fish out of water. Our brain thinks we're hunter-gatherer, but we're actually living in a modern world today.
We also heard from a Stanford psychology professor who studies the fact that kindness is actually contagious. And I got to thinking about some of those public service ads that I remember seeing as a kid that talked about kindness and passing it on. And I'm wondering, is the contagiousness or the stickiness, if you will, of kindness itself, can that be traced back to our evolution as well?
Oh, yes, absolutely. At the root of the fact that you don't see this kindness in other species, almost no other species, but in humans, we're so vulnerable that that's the tough spot. You don't want to be nice at first because from an evolutionary perspective, you could get taken advantage of. There are freeloaders. And so you're always super nervous. To the extent that you see other people being nice or someone is nice to you first, then that reduces your perception of the vulnerability. This is something I advise to people. If you give gifts to people, even if they're small gifts, that gift to the other person says, hey, you're not as vulnerable as you think you are. Hey, I've done this act of kindness. You're not going to get burned if you're kind back to me. It's a way to sort of lubricate the sort of system of kindness.
Now, you mentioned other species, and of course, many of our listeners, I'm sure, have pets, and many of them would say their pets are really kind to them. Is that true? I mean, do other species have the kindness gene? Have they evolved to be kind? Or is my cat just looking at me because it wants food?
Your cat wants food. Your cat has genes. The genes are manipulating it to manipulate you. I'm sorry to deliver that news.
You know, I was hoping you wouldn't. but overall, Jay, are we seeing kindness becoming more important? And I think we kind of touched on this earlier, but we're really just trying to understand, especially in this moment right now, which feels very unkind. How do humans evolve in unkind situations?
I think it goes back to that vulnerability we all feel all the time, that from an evolutionary perspective, the individuals that did stuff without getting paid back, they disappeared. We don't carry their genes. Nonetheless, we're always vulnerable. So in times like these, the more that you can reduce everyone else's perception that they're vulnerable, the more that you can show them, hey, I'm going to make the first step, then it gets so much easier for them to give it back to you. All it takes is that little bit, and it can ease it for everyone.
Jay Phelan is a biology professor at UCLA. Jay, thanks so much for joining us and spreading the kindness.
Thanks for having me, Tanzina.
all kindness all the time today on The Takeaway. And as we listen to your stories from our series, America the Kind, different themes emerged. Kindness from strangers, kindness when you were going through a hard time, and kindness from neighbors.
The nice thing that I would like to report is a neighbor who, every time she travels, she allows us to use her garage, and we really appreciate her.
I want to shout out my neighbors, Tony and Kenna, particularly Tony, who races me to the curb every Tuesday to take my garbage totes in at about 5:30 or 6 in the morning.
That last voice you heard was Barbara McIver of Red Bluff, California, nominating her neighbor of 36 years, Tony Gillum, for America the Kind. So we called them both up to tell us more about their kindness competition, and I started by asking Tony what made him drag her can in for the first time.
I think just one morning she wasn't out there, so I took their trash cans up for them. And then pretty quick, she's out there in my backyard with my cans. So I thought, well, I'll fix her. So I fixed her.
And when you heard that Barbara called The Takeaway to nominate you for this series, what were your thoughts?
Well, I thought I'm not worth it because, I mean, it's not like I was doing this to get paid for or any kind of recognition. But I had other women, you know, in the past. I had four of them, older ladies that I did stuff for because they couldn't afford to have stuff done. And I did that for years, and finally one of them moved in with her daughter down in Southern California, so I lost her. Another one got a boyfriend, which was good. I lost her. Then two of them passed away, so I had to start picking on Barbara.
Tony, I mean, you're not giving yourself enough credit here, but you seem to sound like a person that likes to do kind things for people.
I don't know. I guess so, but they couldn't afford that, you know, people to come fix their fence or fix their boards on their floor or something, so I did it.
Tony once came over and rescued my mother, who was locked in our bathroom next door, so I don't even remember how they did that, but Tony, you're just somebody that we can call on any time, and you've got a nice little crusty exterior to you, but you're just one of the kindest people I have ever met, and I'm so happy you're my neighbor.
Hmm. I must have got that from my wife, because I don't think I was kind before I married her.
Oh, yeah. Well, she's... we could also talk about Kenna, but...
Yeah.
Anyway, I think the point of my call was just an example of the best neighbor you could ever have, and that little daily drip, and knowing they're there, and nothing ever that extraordinary, but it just really is such a blessing to have Tony and Kenna next door.
Do you think we're less kind today, Tony, than we were when you were a kid?
Yes, I do. When I was a kid, you know, if you was out drinking a couple of beers, you know, when you was illegal, the cops catch you, they would take your beer away and make sure you got home and told you don't do it again. But now they throw you in jail and beat you up and all kinds of stuff. So it's, I don't know, I just don't think it's as kind as it was.
I like to think we're in control of that to some degree. Like how much kindness do you get? How much kindness do you get? It really helps to know your neighbors. And I don't know my neighbors like I know Tony and Kenna.
It's interesting because I think we're hearing a little bit of that from a lot of the folks that we're talking to about the importance of looking up from your phone or talking to your neighbors or just trying to reach out. What do you think, Barbara, what would your neighborhood be like without Tony?
I don't know. It would definitely be a colder place without Tony and Kenna. They give us good laughs. They give us warmth, good neighbors. I can't imagine.
How do we become more kind?
I think there's something about saying yes when you can say yes or no. And when I can and when I think about it, I want to be the person who says, yes, yes, I can help you. Yes, I can do that. When we say yes, I think it opens us up to the world a little bit more.
Thank you both again for coming on the show, for sharing this story, and keep spreading kindness, guys.
Well, it was my pleasure.
Thank you so much.
That was Barbara McIver and Tony Gillum of Red Bluff, California. And now we go from people who have been neighbors since E.T. and Tron were in the theaters to a pair who weren't neighbors until after Breaking Bad was off the air. Danae Pointer nominated her neighbor, Kelly Sharbaugh, for sharing her garage space while Kelly's out of town. And while that gesture might seem small, Danae told me it's anything but.
With our building, we have one parking spot that's designated to our particular unit, but that means that for either my partner or myself, one of us, we draw the short straw and are stuck doing the daily drive around trying to find that spot. You have to time your day accordingly, because if you're not home by 5 o'clock, 4:30, then it's a very high likelihood that you could be stuck parking and spending $30 overnight at one of the local overnight garages or parking 8 blocks away, which has happened many times. I think we've spent around $700 collectively in the past year in tickets, and that's probably on the lower side. I know Kelly, I think you said you spent around $1,000.
Oh my God, so much. Well, yeah. I'm not a morning person, so if I ever park in a meter, it's like, you know what, I'll get a ticket. I don't want to wake up right now.
No, that's it. So it takes a lot of time and brain space to figure out the conundrum that is parking in our particular neighborhood.
But, Danae, you had a little bit of a savior here.
I came home one day and I had a note on my door from my neighbor Kelly, who I don't think I even knew Kelly's name. But one day I returned home and Kelly had left a note saying that she was going out of town. And she said, you know, I'll be gone for a week. You guys can totally use our spot. And here's my cell phone number. If you ever need anything, let me know. And it was like, oh my God, I don't know this person, but I love her. And it's funny, my partner had actually seen Kelly a lot more and had, you know, conversated with her. But through that note, I launched the group text. And, you know, sure enough, every time Kelly's gone, which she travels quite a bit, she is our local neighborhood savior. So,
well, that
very
is
grateful
a,
to her.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty big deal, Kelly. What was the impetus behind that note, deciding that you were going to leave that for your neighbor, Danae?
You know, I ran into Dom a couple times walking my dogs, and he was just, like, so happy and, like, so, like, you know, wanting to have a conversation. And I was like, that's so nice to have that neighborly vibe. And I've lived in the building for, like, 4 or 5 years, and I don't have that with a lot of the other neighbors. So I was like, wow, like, he's just going out of his way to just, like, say good morning to me. I was like, I felt better after the conversation. I was like, maybe I can, like, reciprocate and, like, add something to his day.
I have a great boyfriend.
It sounds like you all have established a friendship.
Yeah.
We have.
Yeah.
For sure.
Have you learned anything, either one of you? Have you learned anything from this moment?
I mean, for me, I can speak that it's kind of showed me, like, just to slow down a little bit and just be more present and, like, the day-to-day, even if that just means, like, walking by your neighbors and, like, engaging a little bit. Because we're also used to just, like, looking down at our phones. So maybe just, like, look up and, like, just see what's there.
Yeah, I have to agree with that. Like I said, I didn't really know Kelly before this moment. Like, the quintessential neighborly activity, leaving a note on somebody's door. But, you know, it doesn't take a lot of effort to reach out, say hi, leave a note, be present. So it's something that I want to start incorporating more into my activity with my neighbors. And I feel like I'm getting to know people a bit more in the community. So I'm excited about kind of opening that up and passing that baton and spreading that love to other people where we live.
Well, Kelly and Danae, thank you so much for spreading kindness.
Thanks, Tanzina.
That was Danae Pointer and her parking angel, Kelly Sharbaugh, neighbors turned friends in Koreatown, Los Angeles.
Dear Polly.
Dear Polly.
Dear Polly.
Every week, Heather Havrileski's inbox is filled with cries for help.
Dear Polly, I am exhausted and I feel like everything I do is wrong.
Hello, Polly. I am a 20-year-old college sophomore. My mother and I have not been on speaking terms for years.
Dear Polly, I have a problem.
Heather is the advice columnist behind Ask Polly from New York Magazine's The Cut. I'm an avid reader of the column, and I've even thought of sending in my own letter. And so I'm often struck by the kindness and compassion in the letters that Heather writes to those seeking her guidance, even when she's delivering a difficult message or some seriously tough love. So to end this hour on kindness, I thought, who better to sit down with than Polly herself?
I don't think of myself as an expert on kindness. I do think that I'm in touch with the kind of basic mechanics of what people, I think, don't get enough of in our current culture, and that is a kind of deeper listening that is really hard to find. Part of my approach is sort of like, you know, shower people with the compassion that I often needed when I was younger and that I still need and that I think is sort of lacking in our culture at this particular moment.
I mean, you said, you know, compassion. I was wondering what do you think the state of compassion or kindness is in the United States today?
It's not so great. It's
especially
so
based
great.
On what you're hearing, right? Like, you're getting a lot of people reaching out to you in what are really difficult moments.
What strikes me often with the letters I get, I just read a bunch of letters as I was waiting in a waiting room, and I just went through all of these letters that I got this week, and it almost feels like there's a common theme of people who don't know how to talk to the people who are close to them, don't know how to talk to people who they are in a relationship with, who they're married to, who they, you know, they're not getting the things they need. I think that we have lost our ability to look each other in the eye and say very directly how we're feeling and what we want in ways that I think that, you know, in the old days, there was more face-to-face interaction. I mean, I think that we just rely on our phones too much, and we rely on the distractions inside our phones too much. And so it's like this muscle that we have for face-to-face interaction and real connection and showing up and being present, this muscle is weakening. And you see it in, you just see the side effects of that all over the place right now.
Let's talk about when people aren't kind. And there can be many, many. I mean, that definition is so broad. It could be, you know, so many things. But generally speaking, I think we struggle with this. How and should we excuse people who haven't or aren't kind to us?
My main go-to, I think, as an advice columnist and also as just a human being, is I have no way of understanding someone else's stresses and pressures and the position that they're in. That's something that I think about a lot when I'm going into family situations in particular, because, you know, when you get to know someone really well and you understand how they process things really well, you also, if you're paying attention, you also get to know how differently they process the world. You know, I mean, I look around at some of my friends and I think these people basically don't have the bandwidth for a lot of things because of, you know, I have one friend that has two little kids at home. I have another friend who's a surgeon. I have another friend who is working and has kids at home and her job is very stressful. So I think that the first thing I go to is, how do I tune into the compassion? How can I be compassionate towards this person and understand all of the things that are acting on this person at any given time?
What do you think is prompting? Some folks we've talked to just really do these amazing things for each other. Some of them are continual, some of them are one-offs. But what do you think prompts people to be kind?
I think that the common thread that I observe is that the people who are compassionate towards themselves, people who give themselves a lot of space and room to be who they are, I notice that those people tend to have the bandwidth to reach out to other people. My mom is someone who's so kind to other people and does so many things for other people, but she does it in a really thoughtful way. She actually knows herself. She gives herself what she needs at this point in her life, I think. She has a lot of compassion for herself at this point in her life. Probably not enough, actually, but, you know, she has more than she used to. And so I think she has always served other people naturally and very, very thanklessly and generously. But she's at a point in her life where she knows that this brings her joy, to help other people. You know, she has a lot of older friends. A lot of them need help. Just simple things. And, you know, there was an old guy across the street who she used to roll his garbage out to the curb every day. She just notices when people need something. And she also just, it's part of her value system. I mean, I don't think we talk about value system in the absence of religion enough in this country. And but a lot of us kind of need to think about what our value system is and really examine our belief systems and examine how much kindness brings us joy actually in our lives.
You're talking about values, and I'm thinking back to what are our American values in this country? And I don't know if kindness is a value that we, that is something that we as a community value.
If you do a deep dive into American culture, kindness is not necessarily, it does not come up a lot. There's a lot of like cutthroat competition for resources and survival of the fittest and a sort of belief in you can either make it or you can fall into the gutter. And, you know, what happens to you is never a matter of bad circumstances or unfortunate situations. It's all sort of like were you victorious? Did you climb to the top of the heap, or were you some kind of loser who can't win? I mean, that, you know, winning and losing is just such a recurring theme in our culture. I just think that there's kind of been a turn where we are cynical. You know, we've gone from sort of valuing kindness to some extent to valuing the sound of kindness, like sort of like when a tragedy happens and all the politicians go online and say, our thoughts and prayers are with this person. Because of the way social media works, we've come to see thoughts and prayers itself as a cliche that means nothing. You know, I think we're at a very cynical point in our history. And I do think it's time for secular voices to say that values are important and kindness is important. And actually, when you connect with people face to face, you learn all over again that so many people are actually capable of deeper listening and compassion and kindness. But it takes having those face to face interactions and putting yourself out there in a vulnerable way to have those kinds of connections.
Heather, thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you.
Heather Havrileski is a writer and advice columnist for Ask Polly of New York Magazine's The Cut. Her latest book is a collection of essays called What If This Were Enough? And that's our show for today. And I just want to say, hearing these stories from all of you and talking to you has been a real highlight for me. It feels like the world can be really unkind these days, but you all have given me hope. So let's take your advice. Do me a favor. Look up from your screen. Take the time to help somebody. And smile. Thanks so much for listening. I'm Tanzina Vega, and this is The Takeaway. Keep spreading the kindness.
The Takeaway is supported by Staples, with print and marketing solutions for business, including color copies and presentations, booklets and manuals, signage and banners. More at Staples stores or staples.com. Staples.
And Progressive Insurance, offering Snapshot, a device designed to reward safe drivers. Learn more at progressive.com or 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Now that's Progressive.